Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. For today's episode, I sat down with Andrea from the LA-based indie pop reggaeton project Loyal Lobos. We talk about how she got her start in music by singing at funerals as a child in Colombia, the marriage of beauty and morbidity, her own personal relationship with her femininity and womanhood, and how she infuses all of the above into her writing and performance. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. How's your week going so far?
It's going. It's been a little hectic. I fly to Colombia on Friday. And my house is always a mess now because I'm like not done unpacking when I have to pack again, but it's been really fun.
Yeah, I bet it's just go, 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 like, especially this year.
Yeah, but it's all good stuff.
Yeah, what are you traveling to Colombia for? Are you visiting since you're from there, or is it for like music stuff?
It's music stuff, but I always take advantage of it. It's good because all my family's there. But I'm singing one song with a friend of mine who has a reggae project, and I was a part of it when I was 9, and we did a song about legalizing weed, and I'm gonna sing it again at this festival called Rock al Parque, and I'm also doing a showcase at the Spotify House in Bogota.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
So I listened to your new project, and the first thing I wanted to ask you out of curiosity is, as a songwriter, is writing normally a daily practice for you, or does writing only happen for you when the mood strikes?
It's when the mood strikes, but it sometimes requires like a certain level of discipline to be like ready and open for it to land. Yeah, like this year has been interesting because it's like navigating a lot of things and a lot of like traveling, and you know, I'm very moody, so I go through like my whole like super introvert wanting to hide for a little bit and not feel too much, and then I'll like reopen. But this year I was able to put out a lot of music and create a lot, so it's been really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. When you mentioned that it requires like a certain amount of like discipline to really like stay like open to it, do you have any sort of ways of going about that you find helpful when it comes to like spawning that creative direction that you feel yourself being tugged in?
Yeah, I think just staying open to like different emotions and perspective through it, and the narrative that I want to construct, or like the little world. I am lucky that I have a main collaborator that I've made a lot of music with, that we live very close, and it's kind of a very available spot to create music. This year, like, I've been a little not as like connected with my own instrument, the voice and the guitar, to write, but there's been like a lot of moments where we're able to create from like start a whole track and, you know, different angles to make music, which has been cool. And yeah, I'll just go through like different holes of like things that I get really obsessed about. So like, I don't know, it always changes, but like, for example, for Funeral, I was really into this Diomedes Diaz documentary that I watched, who's was an iconic vallenato singer in Colombia. So like, I watched this documentary about his life and death, and, you know, had a very extreme controversial life, but at the end, like, he died, like, before he died, he kind of lost his voice, but not for like any medical reasons and stuff. I feel like it was very emotional, and that just made me sad. And for example, with that combined with my experiences, because I grew up singing at funerals and stuff, then I made a song and I mentioned him, and the angle was like what I want my life to be and what my death I want to be celebrated like. And yeah, it's always different, like, people or situations that inspire me, and I try to stay open to those things. But yeah, it always changes, and I just try to stay alert to things around me, or experiences of friends, or feelings that I have about certain situations, and that just kind of helps me create things.
Definitely, for sure. And I think definitely being aware of just like spatially what's happening around you can really inform the way you move forward, I feel like, in a lot of different situations. But you mentioned that when you were a kid, you sung at funerals. So how do you feel like that sort of informed the way that you approach to writing and performing now?
I mean, I think my way of writing has been like a collective run of experiences through my life, and that obviously was a big angle, because my first like experiences singing music in front of people were around death and loss, and, you know, I was able to just see how beautiful and vulnerable and humane like loss is, and how people gather around those ceremonies. I grew up agnostic, but it was all around the Catholic Church, because that's kind of the leading religion in my country. And I think, for example, with sound, like, all these churches have very big like cupolas of architecture and glass, so it has a very like reverby sound in acoustics. Like, for example, I always gravitate to that kind of like sonic landscaping for my voice in production. And I've always been like a very happy but nostalgic person, and I think that contributed too, because I find a lot of warmth and beauty in that. And for example, I really like harmonizing and stuff, because a lot of my initial experiences with music were in choir settings, and, you know, just kind of hearing voices mounted on each other and creating like very full and emotional, you know, packs of sound. And to me, that's like also something I really like and appreciate, and I incorporate in my music a lot.
Yeah. Have you ever considered, or have you ever recorded inside a church?
No, but I want to. There's this one song that I wrote about that it hasn't come out, but I'm working on for volume 2, and it's about like a reflection on my existence and my death. And yeah, it talks about also what I see, like, the journey of suffering of someone, like, becoming attached to who they are, or like who they're supposed to be. And, you know, to me, in a way, like, as you grow, you lose a lot of like the fierce approach you have to life. Like, as a child, you are fearless, you are open, you're spontaneous and creative. Like, for example, my sister just had kids like 3 years ago, and I watching them just be, I'm always just fascinated by how fearless and open children are. So this song is about kind of how you lose your wings as you continue to like grow and as you commit to life. And that one I've been dreaming about being able to record at a church and have like a choir singing to it. So I hope I can make that happen. If right. not, I will, you know, go into Splice and different production methods to make it sound that way. But it would be really beautiful if I'm able to make it happen in a very organic and real environment.
Yeah, definitely. I love what you said about childhood being the time when you're the most spontaneous, and as people grow older, they sort of tend to, like, as you said, kind of like lose our wings, because like we become more conscious of just our existence in a way and what we're doing. And you know, it's funny the other day, because like it's funny how in different situations, like acting like a child is socially acceptable only when you are a child.
Yeah.
Like I remember being in the elevator just coming home the other day, and there was another family on the elevator, and I saw their children just like running back and forth, like just being free as a bird, just like, and screaming and just spinning in circles, and thinking, man, if I did that in front of a bunch of people, I would be institutionalized, because I'm not five.
You know? I know. Well, if you did in front of me, you wouldn't be, just because I'm all for that kind of freakiness. But yeah, I was also thinking too, like our relationship with our bodies and the attachment that we develop to them, like as how aware we become of pain or like aesthetics, like we don't want to like, you know, scratch our face or like hurt our knees if we jump too high or like, you know, any types of things. But you see children and they're completely fearless and exploring the limitations of space and body, and they'll just jump on anything and have so many scratches all the time and stuff because they don't feel that kind of like responsibility and attachment to their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been thinking about a lot, because also as a woman, like, and with what I do too, like I see my body so much in image and like video and photography and like things like that, and I've, as I grow, I've developed a relationship where I'm like, maybe through the indoctrination of like society and beauty and stuff like that, like having a different relationship with how I see myself. So I've been also really thinking about that.
Yeah, definitely. I bet. And like, also just when you, and I bet it sort of like, it's never like not unpleasant to always be made aware of like your body and your voice and stuff like that, especially like when what you do for a living is like intrinsically attached to those things in many yeah. ways. How do you feel about this new EP and what it's come to represent for you? Because you've mentioned that it's you finally presenting your full authentic self. And I think you also had said that you felt safer in the very, like way back in the very beginning, that you felt a little safer singing in English. So what do you think triggered this shift where you're like less apprehensive and just embracing like what you want to do?
I mean, I think always to my own capacity and limitations, I've strived to be as expressive and like honest as I can. Like my first EP was all in English by choice because, you know, I had just moved out of home. I had never released music. Like I've done music since I'm very young, and I've been writing songs since I'm four. And, you know, the only time like my music was made public is because I sent this love song that I recorded on like my Dell computer with the voice note application that it had, and like on guitar and singing. And I sent it to one friend and it ended up on LimeWire, totally leaked. And I remember just how exposed and embarrassed I felt when I saw that. And also other experiences I had with the internet when I was a teenager, because I had this like very traumatic like cyberbullying experience. So I think in a way it was kind of like, I mean, I know most people back home speak English that I like went to school with and stuff, because my school was bilingual. But for me, writing it, yeah, in my second language was a less triggering way maybe to do it. And I also really liked music in English when I was little, and pop music that was in the radio, and my dad would listen a lot to like Cat Stevens and Queen, and you know, I really like that. And Shakira was always, well, not always, but like kind of 2000s and up, like a bilingual artist, so the songs would come out in both languages. And I just really also enjoyed seeing the contrast of phonetics like musically in the songs and stuff. So like I like writing in English a lot, and I like lyrics, like lyricism in English as well. But yeah, I think I've always been very raw and open with my songwriting, or I try to be as honest as possible. I also like the creative side of like soundscaping and making everything feel like a space and an experience. But in this EP, like, yeah, I felt maybe more open to exploring different sounds or influences in my music. Like Tengo Sed has a little bit of like a cumbia, and maybe in the, not rhythmically, but in the bolero like tonalities and kind of like harmonics that it has because of the intro with El Rio. Like it slightly goes into like a hard dembo, but it's like with electric distorted guitars and things like that. So I feel like I was a little more fearless in the palette that I was creating sound from, but that's always, I've always, something I've always liked to do. But yeah, I think the reason why it's called Loba, me identifying with that kind of like energy, that it's very fierce and feminine and also like vulnerable and maternal in a way because of the symbolism that the she-wolf carries. I was just kind of committing to it in a way that felt, yeah, less fierce. Like a lot of the music, for example, on Everlasting, it was more from this blue lens that I grew up with and in a very kind of like nostalgic way. And a lot of these songs on Loba are a little bit more like challenging that. Like Tengo Sed is all about being completely like unhinged with sensuality and desire. And yeah, I'm really excited about it in volume two, because it's also a fun site for me to explore with music, and it has been very healing to also kind of project and communicate that. But yeah, I've been really enjoying releasing music in Spanish. Like I had a lot sitting, and my team was very encouraging of doing stuff in Spanish, and I feel in a way like I'm more ready to be in my native space of language through music and stuff because of my journey in life.
Yeah, and going back to the Loba aspect of the prod, like the whole thing, I'm curious to know, like, have you ever read the book A Woman Who Run with the Wolves?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's like a big sort of touchstone of femininity that I think like absolutely should be explored by everybody. Just like the, just even when you trace it back in evolution, just like the instinct to get in touch with your most primal self. And yeah, unfortunately through like conditioning and learned behavior, like I feel like we get further and further away from that. But I mean, it's not all bad though, you know?
No, It's actually a very, and I'm still not in a place where I'm completely in tune with it. I feel like I have suffered my femininity and in a way abused my femininity in a lot of times in like my adolescence through my exploring process of my sexuality and my life. And, you know, the name of Loyola was came to me by a friend, and I was just looking for a moniker to release music through, also as a way to kind of like feel a little safer putting all my feelings out into the world. But I think it came for a reason to me, because I have found a lot of meaning to it through this process of releasing music as Loyal Lobos, Women Who Run With the Wolves. Also, my mom reminded me of the story of Romulo and Remulus, who she told me when we went to Rome, and it's a she-wolf that raised these two kids that were lost in the forest. And there's this big sculpture that it's like so beautiful of like she-wolf and the two babies sucking from her tits. And I think it's like, it carries a lot of meaning, and it's been really beautiful through my music to explore that. I think I'm still exploring it, and I'm still kind of like suffering it. Like when Tengo Sed came out, I had a lot of like mixed emotions about coming off so like fierce and like flirty and thirsty. So, you know, I'm still exploring it, but I do try to just, I don't think about, I'll try to make songs and not like think about myself too much through it, to like protect myself from like hijacking the process and being able to put it out.
Yeah, for sure. Have you realized your dream yet of dancing to Tango Sed at a bodega?
Yeah, actually, I was in New York in July, and my friend played or like sat in on this show that Little Dragon did in this little Brooklyn venue. I forget the name. But then like I went backstage and I met the band, and one of the members had come to one of my shows with my friend, and I didn't know. So we were like chatting, and I was with my dad because I brought him there to be with me. And it was like a really special moment. And I have a lot of friends from Colombia that live in New York. So we all went out after and ended up in Toñitas, which is this like really cool bodega in Brooklyn. That's, I think, the last one standing that's like that. Like cold beer is room temp at best, because it's like super sweaty and stuffy. And there's like a pool table in the middle of the room. And we took them, who are very like European pale, like big beer dudes, and we were just kind of drinking beer. And I thought about it. I was like, I would love to have Tengo Sed be played here and be dancing that song in this space, because to me, it's like where I would want to experience it. So, yeah.
That's really cool. When you mentioned that you can't remember the venue, was it Babies All Right?
Yeah.
By chance?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a secret show by one of my favorite artists there, and it was like really like type of experience where you're never gonna see that type of artist at that size of a venue ever again. And right. So like I've had a lot of like some of the best nights at Babies All Right. So yeah, it's a great place. My
favorite thing about that show was the sound was perfect. It wasn't too loud, because I'm very like hypersensitive to noise, actually. Like, I don't like loud venues. And I hated when people try to talk to me and they yell in my ear. I'm like, bro, I know it's loud, but when you get so close to me, like, it sounds really loud. But they had such good sound, and it still felt very, like, energetic. And yeah, she's incredible. Like, such a cool performance and such a cool band. They're all, like, great people, and they make really cool music. And I was really excited, because when I first moved to LA, I discovered them and I was like obsessed. So yeah, it was really cool.
I think that's really interesting what you said about that specific bodega you went to, like being sort of one of the last of its kind. Do you find that you have like a lot of certain connections with places like that that are unique, but also like feel like they are like the last of their kind, like, because that almost makes them more special in a way?
Yeah, they definitely carry such a special thing when the context around them changes so drastically, and it creates this like micro universe that you go into, and you just, it's so sick. In LA, I'm pretty like reclusive in LA. So I don't like, I think I like already spent all of my like, not all of it, because I still like a good party, but like I started clubbing when I was 13 back home. So like by the time I moved to LA, I only wanted to have like a fake ID to buy wine. And that was it, like $3 wine in Hollywood and kind of be reclusive and right. But yeah, I always like the last standing spots that have carried their spirit and essence throughout. Like Toñitas is really cool too, because she's there always. Also, she's like a boss bitch. She totally at 4 kicked us out and didn't even let me pee in the bathroom. She's like, no, it's closed. And I was like, you know what, fuck yeah, you are a boss. And she keeps it more affordable, like drinks aren't crazy expensive even though it's always packed. And I think even Bad Bunny did a secret event there for his release. I read that about it after, because I was looking up the spot and I was like, that's really cool. But yeah, there's few standing, like I live in Silver Lake in LA, and it's definitely like the Bootleg was one of the venues that I started playing at, and that closed down after the pandemic. Like you do see a lot of them kind of fail, and it's sad because the energy that they carried is so sick.
Yeah, definitely. Those places have character.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's hard to like, you can't make that shit up. You know, like energies really create spaces for me. And when it's fabricated, you just smell that and it doesn't feel that good.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. I feel that way about a lot of like, it feels like it's happening every day. It's like New York has always been changing and migrating when it comes to like gentrification and developers just encroaching everywhere. Like even fucking Bed-Stuy has been gentrified now.
I know.
And
Crown Heights. Yeah, I stayed there once and I was like, damn, this is changing. But it was cool because there were still dudes like in their garage just jamming and eating food, and they'd like even let you hang with them, which I was like, you know, you probably would be so annoyed at. Like I actually was with my family, my mom was all like, what the fuck, like this is a like not an experience she had had in New York ever, but she loved it. But yeah, I even for me going back to Bogota, it's changed so much and it's a little sad, but I think we just also attach ourselves a lot to like a moment and a space, and like the universe is in constant change and so are we as part of it. So I think also you gotta go with the flow. And obviously there's like natural resentment that you would have for gentrification. Like I used to live in Highland Park that is so gentrified now in LA, but it still, you know, it still has a lot of its Latino essence. But yeah, it was sad to like, especially through the pandemic, to watch like a lot of the places close down. But I think also as you want to support these businesses, and I do my best to do that, but I also try not to be so consumed by the loss of all of these places, because it's actually very sad. Yeah.
And on the project, the most, I feel like the most striking song for me was Ado Saboteur, because of how, just because of how minimal and simple it is, but just so devastating as well. What can you tell me about that song and like what it represents to you, like now that it's fully out?
Yeah, like the song is a very like clear explanation of what I feel like I am like in love. And it's not like I think self-awareness sometimes is practiced in ways that it's kind of like too egotistical and like too much committing to the self-sabotaging part of you or whatever it is that you're communicating. With this one, like, I am being very honest about how I feel my experience with relationships has been, but that including my relationship with myself. And the production, I wanted it to be minimal and very like direct and honest, because that's how I grew up writing songs and how I experience them. But the song is about like, it means self-destruct, and it's like how conflicting my relationships are, because I maybe don't allow myself to be completely loved. And then when I receive love, it comes from like control or like fear of losing control or like a complete commitment and then like pull back, you know? And I feel like we experience that so much in relationships. There's always this like hunt and chase and run. And I'm just talking about that in that song and being very like self-reflective about it. But I've been really careful through my life, because going into my feelings and defining myself as like a sad person or like a depressed person or like an anxious bitch or like this or that, when I have done that, it has really deprived me of the ability to accept the full complexity of myself, and I'm not one thing specific. And I think with this song, it's kind of like coming at it and acknowledging it, but it's not too self-defining. And that's why the song, I wanted it to be very just beautiful and melancholic, but not in like a determining way, that's how I hear it, and that's how I intended it to produce it.
That's really cool. And what I feel like is interesting too is that the relationship to the self is always gonna be intertwined with the relationships to other people.
I mean, it's crazy. It's like, to me, in this matrix of reality that we existed in, and you believe you're you, and then they believe they're them, and then whatever you do is either pro or against them, and like that's the game and the dancing of relationships. But within your like matrix of reality, I think people and relationships with people are a materialization of your own relationship with yourself. So like a lot of the conflict that you will have with other people is just a manifestation of the own conflict you have with yourself. And like this shit has happened to me where like I'll repeat a lot of like things to myself that are very harmful, and then I'll encounter people that will also say that to me, you know? And those are like the most telling things of life, because it just shows you that whatever exists here will, you know, be represented outside to other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah, we're all wearing our hearts on the outside of our bodies. Yeah.
Totally. That's what I've been kind of like reflecting on this last year too, because I was like, I don't know, I've been really working on not feeling like life doesn't happen to you. Life is what happens from you and through you, you know? So like, you can have all these enemies or people that you feel like are the perpetrators or victimizers of situations, but it really is about the internal work.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, easier said than done, because you want to punch a bitch sometimes, but...
Another question I'm curious to ask you is, I'm sure that you have, as many of us do, a few artistic heroes or musical heroes who are no longer alive. If you could ask any of them one question, what would you ask? What would you ask them?
I don't know. I've been really into Bingo in the last few months because I've been reading the book of the letters that he wrote to his brother Theo. And it's been interesting because he sounds like such a sensitive man that was so surrendered to beauty and, you know, through art, like art. You know, a lot of the letters are just him every time just conveying how inspired and touched he was by different artists. And just really, you know, I live in LA and I'm sure you get this in New York too. It's like there's a lot of talks about art and artists, but a lot of it is very cloudy and it's about like what's happening. But to really stay very open and vulnerable, to be touched by art and influenced in a way that it's not egotistical, is tough sometimes. So like, I don't know. I guess I would ask him if he'd really killed himself or if those kids mistakenly shot him. That's just something that I've been very curious about, because there's two theories about his death. But in an existential life advice thing, I don't know what I would ask.
Yeah, that's how I feel about like a lot of these unfortunate situations, with especially with people who are so beloved and dear to me, is just like, well, no one but them will ever know what really happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is really, really beautiful though, because I mean, we attach ourselves a lot to the tragedy of death and life and things, but I think, and the fact that he was not known or successful until after he died. So he, to me, it's a really beautiful thing, because it really challenged him to always be making art for the love of making art, even though like there was always this like yearning of being seen. And in a way, I think his life is such a beautiful message of, yeah, commitment and being like a soldier of beauty, and conveying that and how much it influenced and touched other people. So, yeah, I'm curious just because I be like that, but I'm also like, the mystery of it all is part of its beautiful testament of life.
Yeah, exactly. And I also wanted to wrap up by asking, what is one song that you feel like on this album that you feel like is your walk-in music, where it's just like, I'm back, bitches, like that type of vibe? Which song would you Unagata?
Yeah. Like, it's so funny because most of my friends that really like it don't speak Spanish, but they just love singing it. And it's so funny because the other day I walked into a friend's session and he's like a very kind of like slacker punk, but like kind of hip hop dude. And he was just like, he pulled up blasting it in his car and singing it. But it's like a very feminine song, but it's also kind of like catty bad bitch. So I think that Yeah. That would be the one I would want to walk in the streets with, and just kind of like, it's playful, but it's also kind of like empowering and cute.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Andrea, for joining me for a chat. Have a great rest of your week.
All right. Fuck yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Andrea of Loyal Lobos for joining me today. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.